Listening to The Book Biz with Drew Netterpelt on 1490 WGCH. Pressure pushing down on me,
pressing down on you, no matter what. Good afternoon and welcome to The Book Biz on WGCH, Greenwich Talk and News Radio, the only show about the business of publishing and getting or being published. I'm your host, Drew Netterpelt. Hope everyone had a great weekend. Football season is officially underway. How about UConn demolishing Texas Southern on Saturday? Yikes. 62-3. Makes up for the game the week before, I guess. We were off last week enjoying the final holiday of the summer, and so we had a previously aired show on, but we're making up for it this week with a blockbuster of a show. With us today is a bona fide local author from Fairfield, who you might know from his column in the New York Times and his writing for Condé Nast and other outlets. The multi-talented Mr. Paul Sullivan is here to talk about his new book, Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't, as well as give us some tips for pitching your work to agents and authors, and how he went from short-form writing to long-form, which is, for a journalist especially, extremely difficult, not to mention can be traumatic. Before we get to Paul, I want to thank all the folks who've been kind enough to email the show. We're trying to get to as many as we can, but with the holiday last week, we are a bit behind. Please be patient, and we'll get to as many as we can and hopefully be caught up by next week. But please don't stop the emails. They're great. We enjoy providing feedback and advice on the wonderful world of books and publishing. So without any further ado, I'd like to welcome Paul Sullivan to the show. Paul, thanks for being here.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Really, it's our pleasure. Paul is the columnist for the business section of the New York Times, and he's written for what was one of my favorite magazines, Portfolio, which was kind of short-lived, wasn't it?
I always pause and shed a tear when I hear the name. I love writing for Condé Nast Portfolio.
And he's also dabbled in the International Herald Tribune, Barron's, the Boston Globe, and even Food and Wine. What was that all about?
How to invest in wine. That was my niche, because I come at most things from the perspective of money, and so they had me in to talk about great investments in wine.
Of course, of course. And speaking of great investments, you have a new book out called Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't.
That's right. It came out on Thursday, and an excerpt ran in Saturday's New York Times.
Yeah, I read that. That was a great piece. What a great story. It really drove home the idea that in times of stress, I guess we could consider today's economy to be rather stressful, people really need to focus on the problem. And in looking for resolutions to our daily issues, isn't that sort of obvious? Don't we all focus on the problem automatically?
We would like to think that we do, but it's not the case. And when I started writing this book back in 2007, 2008, the idea came to me because I was watching otherwise very intelligent people make horrible decisions under pressure, be they in banking, law, politics, what have you. And I thought, we use this term clutch so often in sports, but it has such a greater applicability. And that's how the book began. But in the course of all of this, unbeknownst to me, the U.S. economy collapsed, and I started thinking about it on a much deeper level, and that was, at this point, there's so much pressure on all of us that we need to be clutch in our everyday lives, be you, a stay-at-home mom or a banker, in order to make the right decisions. And as you said, Drew, the first principle of being clutch is focus.
Is focus something that you can really learn, though? Or isn't it something that you either have or you don't, or you drink coffee to get?
Yeah, and I spend a bit of time in the book differentiating, the five key traits, the first one being focus, because on the surface they sound obvious, but if they were obvious, we would all be great under pressure, and unfortunately we're not. I've choked a fair number of times in my life, but focus is very different from concentration. Concentration is remembering your grocery list without writing it down. Focus is an overarching ability to put yourself in that situation and to really drill down. In the book, I illustrate it with a courtroom story, and I focus on the attorney David Boies, who a lot of us know now because of Proposition 8 in California. He was on the losing side of Bush v. Gore. But I begin the book by telling his story of what he did in U.S. versus Microsoft, in which he was representing the United States, and he essentially tied Bill Gates into a knot. And I asked him, you know, I sat through several of his trials, and I asked him when we sat down last summer, you know, how do you do it? And he says, I never focus on the nitty-gritty. I never focus on what you would think I might focus on. And in my view, that was, you know, the concentration part. And so in U.S. versus Microsoft, he didn't concentrate on browser technology. That was what the case was about. He realized that any tech-savvy person, any Microsoft techie, could come in and blow his case out of the water. Instead, he focused on the overarching idea of credibility. These guys may know more about technology than the rest of us, but can I believe what they're telling me? And he calls it a morality play, but he's used this throughout his career. And this is, you know, I use this story to tell how important focus is, because unless you find something, you know, to focus on, be you a lawyer or a baseball player or a banker or a mom, you're not going to go very far under pressure.
What are the other? You said there were five. What are they?
Yeah, the second one is discipline, which is always a battle against yourself. The third is adaptability. If things don't quite go our way, we don't really want to continue to adhere to the plan. We want to come up with a new plan. The fourth is being present, which again may sound obvious, but I illustrate it through the notion of stage fright. I talk about this great TV actor who gets a theater role of a lifetime and how much different it is for him. And the fifth is what I call the push and pull between fear and desire. And this is something that any truly successful entrepreneur has had to apply. And in one example I use in the book is the story of Bernie Marcus, the founder of the Home Depot. And he was telling me that he dubbed his management strategy early on running scared, because they had a great desire to succeed, but they knew that if they failed, there was so much on the line that not only would they be wiped out, but all of these people they had asked to move from wherever to Atlanta would be quite angry at them. So that was the fear and desire component.
That's fascinating. Now, you were on the San Francisco Giants broadcast on Saturday talking about clutch performance, and I'd recalled, and so I'd looked up, there was a study done about a decade ago by David Grabiner, I believe, that found that the correlation between regular and so-called clutch hitters was statistically undiscernible. Was he just measuring the wrong thing, or what? Surely you came across that in your research.
Yeah, he's one. Dan Ariely, who wrote Predictably Irrational, is another. Even for a long time, Bill James, who is one of the founders of Sabermetrics, a real stat guy in baseball, wasn't quite sure if clutch existed. And that's where, I mean, I define clutch very precisely. It's the ability to do what you can do under normal conditions, under extreme pressure. And that's really the key, what you can do normally under a whole heck of a lot of pressure.
Right.
And so when they do these studies, what they neglect is the drop in the athletes who aren't great. I mean, for me, the easiest way to illustrate this as a New York Yankees fan is Derek Jeter. I mean, he is consistently good. He is not the best shortstop in baseball. Before A-Rod joined the team, A-Rod was a better shortstop. But when he's in those crucial moments in the postseason, he has the ability to treat them as if it's, game two of the ALCS could be game 79 in the regular season. I mean, he has that ability to focus. He has the discipline. He gets a bad call, bad pitch. He adapts, and he is always present in that moment. And he is not thinking, "Good God, I'm about to bat in the postseason, and if I do well and we keep doing well, we'll go into the World Series. I mean, that is, you know, the counter to all of this in the book is, you know, it begins on the positive, but it shifts to the negative of all the things we do when we choke under pressure.
And one of the things I think, as you're saying, is we lose. I think there's physiological tests that have been done that demonstrate that physiologically your blood pressure, your heart rate, you're just not thinking correctly physiologically when there's stress.
Well, I mean, Charles Morgan up at Yale has done some research on this, and in psychology they call it resilience, and he's done all of his tests on Navy SEALs because he figures all these people opt in, they all believe they're great under pressure, and only some of them are. And he's found different, you know, chemicals in the brain that do make some people more predisposed to being great under that level of extreme pressure. But and then there's another school of thought that is the sort of more mystical school of thought of that, you know, if you think in a certain way, you think positively, you're going to do great under pressure. And I fall in between. You know, I don't believe any of the mystical stuff. I mean, I've played golf too long to know that, you know, you can think as positively as you want, but you could still shank that shot close to the green.
Right.
And I don't want to give it all away to the scientists who say, you know what, some people are much more resilient than others. I believe that to be true. But my book is in between, and it looks at, you know, what can we do? Your blood pressure may be racing, but why is it racing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've done something 100 times before, maybe it's just your body's natural response to getting ready. I mean, when I talked to Larry Clark, who was an actor early on in Law and Order, he's in the chapter on being present, he talked about, you know, if you're a professional actor, you never get stage fright. It's not even in your makeup. But if you're perhaps a business person or who has to give a speech or a mom who's, you know, organizing a presentation for the PTA, it's a different level. Why? Because you haven't done it before. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we need to remember. Being good under pressure is not about luck. There's no element of luck involved here. It's not a hole-in-one to win the tournament. It's more you've done this before. Maybe you haven't done it well, but you've learned from those mistakes. And so now you're on an even bigger stage, and you're going to be able to perform. Whether or not your heart is racing, you know you can do it because you've done it in the past.
Right, and golf is a great example. You see, I mean, almost without exception, a player needs to put himself in a position to win a few times on Sunday before they actually are able to come through and pull the trigger.
That's right, and you know, one of my chapters I follow a journeyman golfer, a guy named Matt Goggin, who at the time was 48 in the world. And this is last year at the Players Championship, and He had all the skills of you know, of anyone. I mean, you looked at him and said, why hasn't this guy won? And he had all the belief in the world, but he was a lousy putter. I mean, everything else statistically was much better or at least average to everybody else on tour. And these are the 125 best golfers in the world, except his putting. He was about a stroke less than everybody else. And so that was the one thing that was holding him back. And when I talked to his coach, he said, the problem is when he gets into contention, if he is not putting well, it comes back to haunt him. He thinks, I am not a great putter. And so then he tries to hit the ball closer to the pin so he has a shorter putt, or he tries to do things that he doesn't have to do, wouldn't normally have to do if he wasn't a better putter. And this has, you know, inhibited him. I mean, he's done quite well financially, but it's inhibited him from winning a tournament.
And speaking of people who are financially well off despite poor putting, Paul, who usually wins all my money on the golf course, is going to come back and tell us about his shift from journalism to a 100,000-word book and some tips on what you can do when you're faced with a unexpected or even expected elevator pitch to an editor or an agent. And, of course, more fun sports and military anecdotes. Stay tuned.
I had to know, I heard it on my If you like your books with a venti twist of lemon zest nutmeg macchiato, served with a cinnamon swizzle bear's claw cruller, and gluten-free sparkly cupcakes with sugar-free caramel-infused free-range icing, all nestled among board games, hockey card tins, and get-well wishes, then you've got lots of choices in Greenwich. If you like your books served with a sizable helping of knowledge and expertise, with a dash of sass and a boatload of hospitality, then there's only one place for you. Just Books at 28 Arcadia Road in Old Greenwich.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Rain drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good.
You're listening to The Book Biz with Drew Netterpelt on 1490 WGCH.
Welcome back. We're here visiting with Paul Sullivan, author of Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't. So you've been a short form writer for years, having written for The Times and magazines and lots of newspapers. What's the difference for those of our listeners? What's the difference writing short form versus actually writing a book?
Yeah, I mean, for me, writing a book called Clutch about, you know, why some people excel under pressure and others don't, it was almost, I was learning as I went along, because up until this point, I had never written a story longer than 7,000 words. You know, 7,000 word story for a magazine is quite long, but my book is 90,000 words long. You know, my column for the New York Times is 1,200 words long. So thinking about 90,000 words, that's pretty daunting. It's overwhelming. And so I didn't think about it. I mean, the first thing I thought was, okay, what is the story I want to tell? And I thought, how am I going to tell it? I did a lot of research to really get the traits nailed down ahead of time, kind of think of the chapters. And I said, okay, mathematically, I'm going to make each chapter about 7,000 words, because I had done that before. I knew I could do that. Some are longer, some are shorter, but that allowed me to focus on a very concrete goal. And then I had the discipline to carry it out, and, you know, I adapted, because sometimes it went well, sometimes it didn't. But, I mean, the one lesson I taught myself was, don't think of yourself as writing a book. I mean, that is a recipe for writer's block. I mean, what you need to do is write a chapter, then you need to write another chapter, and then you need to keep going, and at the end, you see what you have, and, you know, I think the final product was about 110,000 words, and then I started to whittle it down from there. But it was much more a series of small steps and not one large leap.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very good. Now, this show is aimed at lots of pre-published writers, folks who are in the position of trying to get an agent or trying to get a publisher. And so they'll often attend writing conferences where, you know, they've paid good money for, say, 5 or 10 minutes in front of an agent or an editor to pitch them. What advice can you give that person so they make their few minutes in front of a person of influence, you know, so they can hit that out of the park, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, and this wasn't the first book I tried to write, so I can really empathize with those people. I went to the Breadloaf Writers Conference myself, and, you know, I think I wrote 4 books before this that weren't published in all different genres, a book of vignettes, a very dark, bitter novel, a more lighthearted novel, most of a memoir that actually ended up getting me the agent I have. And so the only thing I can really tell them is to persevere. But if you go to a writer's conference and you have, you know, those moments in front of an agent or an editor, make it count. Don't just show up and say, I'm writing X. I'm writing a great story about X, Y, and Z, because everybody thinks that. Have something to show them. It's much easier to say, okay, I've done this and this and this. Even if, you know, your short stories or, you know, your novel, even if it isn't published, it shows that you have that level of seriousness that you want to do it. You know, I have a good friend of mine, Alistair Reed, who wrote for The New Yorker for years and years and years. He's in his mid-80s now. He's a mentor of mine. You know, he said that William Shawn, the legendary editor of The New Yorker, used to always tell him, don't tell me what you're going to write. Just write it, and we'll talk about it afterwards.
That's great. That's wonderful. Are there... your book is full of great insight and interviews and discussions with, you know, famous and non-famous people. Are there any quick tips that you can have for? I mean, you know, if someone is being put in a situation that they're expecting to be put in, you know, a speech or something that they can foresee, that's one thing. What about those situations in life where you're thrust in a very stressful situation? Are there any quick tips that you can give our listeners that would help them overcome situations like that?
Sure, a great question. Two things that come to mind is one, David Price, who's a pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays, and he started the All-Star game this year for the American League. He told me when we were talking, I was asking him about, you know, his meteoric rise as a pitcher, and I said, you know, what do you do under pressure? And he stopped me, and he said, Paul, all pressure is perceived. And before he actually goes out to pitch, he thinks of the most atrocious situation he can think of, somebody getting a home run off him and winning the game. And from that, he works backwards. And so pressure, I believe, is an external force, but stress is something we all feel in our day-to-day life, and that's much more of an internal force. But it's still perceived. And the second great tip, one that I apply to my life all the time, I'm, you know, live in Fairfield County, I'm the father of a one-year-old daughter, and I think of this almost every single day, and that's what Colonel Tom Colditz, he's the head of the behavioral studies program at West Point, told me. And he says his motto for every cadet he talks to is fight the fight, don't fight the plan. And that, to me, really resonates, because we all have these great ideas. This is what we're going to do. Today we're going to do these 10 things. And not only are we going to do these 10 things, but we're going to do them in this order, and it's going to take us this amount of time. Well, as soon as something goes wrong, it's all thrown off. And so if we stick to that plan, it's just going to snowball. And in our everyday life, it's going to cause stress. And if we're, you know, running a company or a law practice, there's going to be pressure on us. And essentially, we're going to choke under pressure. But it's that ability to adapt. You know, as Colonel Colditz said, it's fighting the fight, not fighting the plan. And that, to me, you know, personally, you know, in from my own book, which sounds narcissistic, but from my own book, that's the greatest takeaway, and that's the thing I think about more than anything else.
And so, thinking about your audience in the nude doesn't really work.
No, because, you know, being a father now and writing this book, I haven't been working out very much in the past 18 months. So that's the last thing I want to think about. Me nude, the rest of them nude, be horrible.
Well, that brings me to the last question, and this has been extremely informative. But, the question I have over all others is, how in the world can you have a one-year-old write a book, write for all of these outlets, and still play golf the way you play?
It's a perfect balance of black coffee, water, and red wine. I mean, if you get that mix correct, you'll be fine.
Very good. Well, listen, Paul Sullivan, thanks so much for joining us on the Book Biz radio show. Great book, Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't. Pick up a copy today at your local bookseller or online. Thanks, Paul.
Great. Thank you, Drew. I appreciate it.
For those in the Greenwich area or who enjoy hearing fascinating and bright individuals speak, Paul is going to be at the Roundhill Country Club on September 29th in Greenwich. Though if you end up playing golf with him that day, just please keep in mind that while he may say he's an 18 handicap, he's more like a 9. And he'll also be at Diane's Books on October 14th. You can also check out Paul's website at pauljsullivan.com. And read his weekly column in the New York Times. We don't have a lot of time left, but we do have time for one email that I'd like to read from Mike in San Diego, who I'm assuming is either on vacation in our listening area or listens to the show online at wgch.com or at bookbizradio.com. Mike writes, Sneed said that only people who had been in the publishing circus for 10 years should consider publishing their own books. Does that go for self-publishing as well? Good question, Mike. And the answer to that question is no. What Sneed was talking about, and for those of you who didn't hear the show, Sneed Collard is a writer, an author who's written more than 50 children's books. But when it came to get a nonfiction book on rodeo horses published from the top publishers, everyone turned he and his agent down. You can actually listen to that show on bookbizradio.com/show or at WGCH.com. But what Sneed was talking about was publishing, whereas self-publishing is really more like printing. Don't get me wrong, I'm a huge fan of self-publishing. If you think you've got a great product and you've been turned down from the traditional folks out there, and you really just want a proof of concept or want to get a product out there, there are lots of folks for whom self-publishing is a great way to take whatever product they have to market. But let's not confuse self-publishing with publishing. In self-publishing, most self-publishing companies typically don't do any editing, and certainly not to the extent that a traditional New York publisher would do. I don't mean commas and capitals. Content editing is obviously key, as well as all the line editing. And they're not going to be creating typesetting, unique typesetting for the book, and they're not going to be bringing in top designers or illustrators. And the printing, the actual printing of the product won't be offset. It'll be digital. I could go on and on. I mean, you've got proper distribution. There won't be a sales team to call on the retailers or the wholesalers across the country. And on and on. What the self-publishing folks do is print your book and give you something to put in your hands and something to put in the hands of others and frankly something to sell, which is great because for many folks that's really 100% of what they want and what they need. But what Sneed was talking about was spending tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars investing in a publishing operation to get your product, in this case his one book, into the marketplace. And that really needs some experience behind it. Unless, of course, you have a few hundred thousand dollars that you don't mind losing, which, of course, harkens back to the old adage that the best way to make a million in publishing is to start with 2 million. I hope you found the show informative and interesting. If it was or if it wasn't, drop us a line at mail@bookbizradio.com and let us know. If you have a show or guest suggestion, send them to mail@bookbizradio.com. And if you have book projects you'd like to pitch, you can go to bookbizradio.com and you'll find a submission link there. And lastly, if you have any questions about the business of books, agents, or publishers, feel free to send them along to mail@bookbizradio.com. We'll try to answer as many as we can in private, and we'll answer a few on the air. Mike, you'll be getting a copy of Think or Sync for your email this week. Thanks again, and we will see you next week when we've got a great show. We've got my speaking circuit buddy and author of more than 80 books and logger of millions of air miles, Dan Poynter, will be with us. You won't want to miss it. In the meantime, just remember, no one knows what will sell. So keep writing and keep pitching and never give up.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for